You're listening to The Taylor Marshall Show, episode 95. I'm a new dad. We just had baby number 8, Margaret Grace Carol Marshall. I'll talk about her and the joys of being the father of a large family. Howdy, and thank you for tuning into The Taylor Marshall Show. This is the podcast for everyone who wants to create daily habits and learn enough theology to take their faith to the next level. And we just brought home a beautiful, brand new baby girl. I'm going to talk about her and the birth, and then also the joys of being a father of a large family. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are in the world. And thanks for tuning in. It's a joyful time. It's fall, autumn, my favorite season. And we had our brand new baby girl. For those of you that were following us, we went in on Wednesday. That would be October 21st. That is the Back to the Future Day. October 21st, 2015 is when Doc and what was his name? Well, Michael J. Fox, when they went, the time they set to go into the future. And everyone was excited on TV and Facebook about the Back to the Future Day. So we thought, oh, we'll have this baby girl on the Back to the Future Day. We can name her McFly or DeLorean or something Back to the Future. Just kidding. We weren't going to do that. And the labor went forever. I was posting updates on Facebook and Twitter, and hundreds, maybe even thousands of you were praying and sending us responses, and it was extremely encouraging. Joy was tired. She was laboring. I was tired. We were frustrated. We were worried. It went 24 hours. The water had been broken, I think, about 20 hours, which is too long. So the doctor just made the decision that we're going to have to do a C-section. This is our 8th child. Thanks be to God, we've never had a miscarriage. And Joy has always been a birthing warrior, if I can say that. She's had 8 children. She's had twins. We have twin daughters, Mary Claire and Rose. We've had babies in the hospital. She's given birth 3 times in home. In fact, in my office, where I've written a lot of my books. Not only were books born there, but babies were born there. And finally, we've had the cesarean. And of course, the recovery is much more difficult with the cesarean. And she's doing really well and getting stronger. She spent extra days at the hospital to catch up. We thought that was a good idea because with all the kids at home, especially we have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, they'd want to sit on her lap, bump into her, ask her to pick things up. The temptations to do work would just be too high. So we decided it would be most prudent to just keep her in the hospital and let her heal up as much as she can. And she did come home on Sunday, and the kids were thrilled to see her and to see the baby. We named her Margaret Grace Carol Marshall, and Margaret comes from my grandmother's mother, who actually died in childbirth. And also Margaret comes from the Latin margarita, so our Latin word of the week is margarita. And margarita, no, is not just a frozen alcoholic drink that we all love to enjoy down here in Texas. Margarita means pearl in Latin. Margarita means pearl. So this little baby reminds us that Christ in his kingdom is the pearl of great price, and we should sell everything, give up everything in this life in order to receive Jesus and to receive his kingdom. We named her Grace just because we like the name Grace. We thought about Grace as a first name, but it's extremely popular right now, and Joy doesn't like to give super-duper popular names to the kids, so we reserve that as a middle name, but we like the idea of Grace because Grace saves us, of course. And then we weren't planning on the name Carol. She was just going to be Margaret Grace Marshall, but we realized as we moved past midnight during the labor that we had passed into a new day, October 22nd, and that's the feast of St. John Paul II, the great pope. And Joy and I had not been Catholics during the reign of John Paul II. It's one of my regrets in life. But when he died, we certainly felt the effects of his life and of his prayers. And I remember coming home. I was in seminary, actually, Episcopalian seminary. I remember the day that John Paul II died. I came into our little apartment there on campus at the seminary. Yes, in Episcopalian seminaries, there is married housing because the priests and the seminarians are not celibate. I remember coming in and saying, like speaking in tongues, Papa Mortuus Est, the Pope is dead. And Joy knew what that meant, and we both teared up and we cried, even though we weren't Catholic. You'll be also interested to know that that next Sunday, we decided to go to a Catholic church to go to Catholic Mass, even though we were not Catholic, just to show our solidarity with the Catholic Church for having lost their Pope. So Joy and I drove our kids from the seminary to the local Catholic parish. This was in Wisconsin, by the way. And we had gone to Episcopalian Seminary at Neshota House, which is in Wisconsin. And we went to the local parish there, and the priest didn't say hardly anything about Pope John Paul II, to our shock. But he did tell us during a baptism that the holy water was not really holy, because all water in nature is holy. And he also told us during one of the readings that Peter didn't write 1 Peter. And then he had all the children come up around the altar during the consecration. And he made up his own consecration prayer that rhymed. All I remember in the consecration was that he rhymed the words. It was something like, on the night before he was dead, he lifted up and took the bread. So he made up his own Eucharistic prayer. And Joy and I were pretty scandalized by the Catholic Church. We were, I think, interested in it, but going to a local parish and just seeing all that liturgical abuse, we were kind of, I don't know, frightened. So anyway, not just to say the least, we don't think we ever went back to that Catholic Church. I know we didn't. We never did. And amongst Anglicans, amongst Episcopalians who are liturgical, sometimes there's this idea of Roman fever, where you get this bug where you're like, well, maybe we should become Catholic and not be Episcopalian. And they say the cure for Roman fever is simply to attend a Catholic church. I know this is very sad. Many of you don't want to hear it. Just attend a Catholic church, listen to the sermon, look at the liturgy, and you'll soon realize that you don't want to become Catholic. I know that that's very sad, but there are Protestants out there who say that, and I think the Protestants do have a point. Sometimes our music, our homilies, our architecture, the liturgical abuses that are present in some places, in some dioceses in the Catholic Church, repulse many Protestants and keep them from entering into the Catholic Church, because they're smart enough to know that priests shouldn't be doing that or shouldn't be saying that, or, you know, whatever it is, whatever the abuse is, they know that that's not right. And so it just sort of convinces them to remain Protestant. Anyway, that was a huge tangent. So that was our initial, devotion to John Paul II many, many years ago. That would have been in 2000. Well, when did Pope John Paul II die? That was 2005. Yeah, so this is its 10-year anniversary. So this was 10 years ago. Joy and I think, you know, John Paul II, in his prayers as he died, he released a lot of graces into the world. And I think Joy and I received those graces, and it helped us become Catholic a year later, actually, a little bit over a year after John Paul II died, we became Catholic. And here we are 10 years later naming a child after her. So we added the name Carol to the name because John Paul II's baptismal name is Carol Wojtyla. And we thought, I actually brought up to Joy, I was like, do you want Joanna Paula as like a middle name, like Margaret Grace Joanna Paula or John Paul or Jean Paula or something? And we didn't like that. But after Margaret was born, and she came out of the womb, and they put her on the warming table and were, you know, sucking out her nose and looking her over and checking her out, I went over and put my hands on her and began to pray. And I realized I wanted to add Carol for Carol Wojtyla to her name, because Carol kind of sounds, it's a girl's name, not like John Paul. And Joanna Paula is just, it's just too long since we already had Margaret and Grace. So it would have been Margaret, Grace, Joanna, Paula, Marshall. But Carol is beautiful, and it fits. So we added Carol, and Joy was just so happy. As they were sewing her up from the cesarean, she was just looking over, wanting to hold the baby so much, because usually she gets to hold the baby right away. So she had to just patiently wait. And it was beautiful. The baby is healthy. She was 8 pounds, 7 ounces with a gigantic head. I can't remember the measurement, but the doctor was impressed by how big her head was. And he said that's probably why she couldn't be delivered. Her head was just too big and couldn't get out of the birth canal. So, and he said that probably in the older days, Joy and the baby would have died. There probably wouldn't have been delivered. After that much time, infection would have started to take hold in one or both of them, and that would have been the end. So thank God for modern medicine. Thank God that I still have my lovely wife, Joy, and I have this beautiful baby, Margaret. She's home. She's nursing like a champ. She's filling her diapers, which is always a good thing. Maybe not to change them, but it means the baby's healthy. And she's sleeping really well. I've only heard her cry maybe 6 or 7 times. She's a really good baby. As I told a friend of mine this morning, I think God makes having the babies easier and easier, and it's his way of tricking you into having more babies. Just kidding, not really tricking, but you know what I mean. So yeah, we're very happy. This is a great season in our life. We love the pace of our lives. We love where our children are in school. Everything is just wonderful. We are so blessed. I am so grateful. And I've made a commitment to make sure that I attend Mass every day for 30 days just to thank God for this baby and to thank God for where we are in our life right now. We are just so blessed. I know that the best way that we can thank God is to attend and receive the Eucharist, because Eucharistia in Greek means thankfulness, gratitude. So the best way that we can show gratitude and to receive grace, gratia, is to go to Mass. So going to Mass every morning, even though it does cut into the schedule and it can be sometimes difficult with taking kids to school and with the new baby and all that, I want to make that commitment and show God that I'm grateful to him. So I want to talk a little bit about being the father of a large family. I get this question a lot from men. Men write me, they email me and contact me and ask me questions. A lot of men are discouraged, and I understand that. A lot of moms are discouraged, and you don't have to have multiples, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 to be discouraged. You can have 1 or 2 babies and be discouraged. I remember, the difficulties of bringing home our first child and the stresses and the lack of sleep and the stresses that that causes in your marriage and the financial stresses that having a baby causes, the stresses at your work because you're tired or your thoughts are elsewhere. I've noticed, just in writing blog posts and writing, I'm doing a lot more typos in the last few days. Why is that? Well, it's because I'm tired, and that's okay. If you read my blog post from a couple days ago, after it went out and it was, it emailed out to 30,000 people. There's 30,000 people on the email subscription list, and they get these emails. It went out at noon, and later on that day, I looked at it, and there was like 8 typos, and I was like, oh, I was so embarrassed. How did I have so many typos? How did I not see those? And the reason is, I'm just tired. My mind's a little foggy. It's okay. You can't get down yourself. So what is it like to be a father, a parent of a large family? And then maybe what are some tips for those of you that are fathers? Maybe your grandparents, maybe your uncle, your aunt, somewhere in your life you're related to or know someone with a baby. How can you be encouraged, and how can you give encouragement to other people? The first is to just realize that having children is difficult. Having babies is hard. It's hard at the beginning. Labor is usually not a pleasant experience. The first 5 to 6 months after a baby are, in my experience, very difficult. I would say that 90% of the arguments or fights that Joy and I have had have been within the 5 to 6 window of time after the birth of a newborn. She's tired and cranky. I'm tired and cranky. Things that usually don't bother you do begin to bother you. So that's difficult. As they get older and they go into school, now you're dealing with homework, sports. We're driving kids all over the place for sports. And now we have our first teenager, and we're now tasting the joys of raising a teenager with the emotions and the stresses and the peer pressures and all those conversations that go along with raising a teenager. And then, as I've heard, as they get even into college and in their 20s and 30s, sometimes it doesn't end even there. There's still stresses and concerns and worries and so on and so forth. So having a child is difficult. And people in this world look at everything I just said, and they're like, what's the point in that? No, thank you. I'm going to travel a lot. I'm going to use that extra money that I would spend on private schools and on sports, and I'm going to buy nice clothes, and I'm going to have a really sweet car, a luxury vehicle, and my wife and I are going to take amazing vacations, and we're going to go out to great restaurants, and that is the life. And honestly, there have been moments as a father where I've looked at friends who have, or acquaintances who have chosen that life, and I think to myself, man, maybe they got it right. I'm sitting here with kids who are throwing up from some stomach flu, stomach virus, and so-and-so is out there on vacation, and I'm looking at his pictures on Facebook. What a bummer. Well, hey, you know what? It is difficult and it is hard, but I want to bear witness to you. It is worth it. The moments where you receive the little hug, the first word, teaching them to walk, getting the report card that has all A's and maybe that one B on it, seeing your 8-year-old, you know, get his first hit, seeing him steal home for the first time, going to your daughter's dance recital, whatever it is, going to the baptism, you know, seeing my twin daughters receive their first communion together in their beautiful white dresses. These are the moments of my life that stand out as the peaks, as the high points. And I've traveled a lot. I've been to super duper nice restaurants. I've been to countries in Africa. I've hunted on safari in Africa. I've been to many nations in Europe. I've been to China. I've traveled a lot, and I travel a lot still because of speaking and whatnot. And none of those experiences, restaurants or whatever, compare to the moments of hearing, Daddy, I love you, or sitting up at night with my twin daughters who are 11 and just talking to them about whatever it is. These are the moments that I cherish, and these are the moments that I fight for. And in the valleys, in the difficult times of illness or being tired, those are the moments that I come back to. And life is a Good Friday, Easter Sunday cycle. And as Catholics, you just need to recognize that. We just need to say, I realize that there are days of crucifixion and moments of crucifixion, but I believe and I declare and I trust that the resurrection will follow. Goodness will come. I've been knocked up, but I'm going to be lifted up to something higher. That is joy and my personal belief. Every setback is a setup. Sometimes God stretches you and stretches you and stretches you. I remember in one of the most difficult times of my life, Joy said to me, God is stretching you and stretching you and stretching you. It's like a rubber band being stretched back, right, on a finger. And he's going to let you go, and you are going to fly forward into new things that you can't imagine. And it's true. That's exactly what God does. So he stretches us with these children, with these little ones, but he's preparing for preparing us and them for greatness. And we need to believe that, and we need to stand in our Catholic faith and confess it. And we have to say it. We have to live it. We have to believe it. And that brings us to number two. We have to have gratitude. I'll tell you, if I just am bummed out and I go and focus on my Twitter feed or Facebook or go watch the nightly news and phase out, I get worse. I get more discouraged. What makes me feel better every single time is gratitude, being thankful. Being thankful to my wife, instead of, you know, if she's tired and she's a little grumpy and grouchy, instead of being upset about that, I should be thankful that I have a wife who has delivered 8 beautiful babies to me, that she loves me, that she's faithful to me. I should be grateful for that. Instead of in the middle of the night when I am woken up for the third time because the baby's crying, I should be grateful that this baby is healthy and that this baby's holy, and that this baby is going to be a blessing to me and to the rest of the world. I should thank God in that moment for that. Even in our mistakes, let's say you make a mistake with your business. You make a mistake in your family. Maybe you make a moral mistake, a sin. Maybe it's a big moral mistake, a mortal sin. Even then, we should have gratitude. We should say to God, God, you know, I'm not dead yet. You still have a plan for me. I am sorry I made this mistake. I repent of my sins. But I thank you that there's still time left. I thank you that you still have given me gifts, even though I've made a mistake. That's really the secret to happiness, is being thankful, being grateful. I learned that, well, I learned that from the Bible, but I learned that also from my grandmother. We must thank God for the gifts that we have now. There's a lot more good in your life than there is bad in your life right now. You might say, oh, Taylor, you don't know. I'm in the middle of a divorce. I'm in the middle of a bankruptcy. I'm in the middle of a tax audit. I'm in the middle of a horrible disease that I might die from. I have a family member who's in a horrible disease. You don't know. My life is bad. I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think God has given you goodness, and he's given you grace, and he's given you gifts. And even in the last moments of our life, there is goodness, and there's something to be grateful for, and we can commit our spirits to God and be thankful. And third, I think the key to being a parent, a good parent, a joyful parent, is maintaining positivity. Saying positive things. Now, some people say, well, that's kind of like lying. You know, I can't say, you know, everything's going well when everything's not going well. I want to challenge you on that point. There's a great story in the Bible. It comes from 2 Kings, and it's the story of Elisha. Now, Elisha was the successor of the prophet Elijah. And in 2 Kings, we read a story about a Shunammite woman. And she had prayed to God that she would have a son. And God gave her a son, and she trusted in that. But one day, her son went out with her husband into the field to reap. And in verse 19, it says that the son said to his father, "Oh, my head, my head." The father said to his servant, "Carry him to his mother." And when he had lifted him up and brought him to his mother, the child sat on her lap till noon, and then he died. And she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door behind him and went out. So something happened here, a stroke. The child overheated. We don't know what happened, but he had a headache, and then suddenly the child died in his mother's arms. Then she called to her husband and said, "Send me one of the servants and one of the donkeys, that I may go quickly to the man of God and come back again." And he said, "Why will you go to him today? It is neither new moon nor Sabbath." So he says, hey, it's not a feast day. It's not a holy day of obligation. Why are you going to go see a holy man? She said, "All is well." Now, wait a second. The Shunammite woman, her son just died in her arms. She's going to go and see the holy man. She has faith that her son can be raised again, resurrected. And so she says, all is well. Now, factually speaking, all is not well. Her son is dead. There's a corpse. But she says, all is well. She makes a statement not about the historical facts in the past hours or day. She's making a affirmation of faith that God is going to bring about all things well. So in verse 24, she saddled the donkey and she said to her servant, "Urge the animal on. Do not slacken the pace for me unless I tell you." So she set out and came to the man of God at Mount Carmel. And when the man of God saw her coming, he said to Gehazi, his servant, "Look, there is the Shunammite. Run at once to meet her and say to her, 'Is all well with you? Is all well with your husband? Is all well with the child?'" And she answered, "All is well." Now, is she lying? Her husband's grieving. Her son is dead. And yet she says to the servant of the holy man, Elisha, "All is well." And when she came to the mountain, to the man of God, she caught hold of his feet. And Gehazi came to push her away, but the man of God said, "Leave her alone, for she is in bitter distress, and the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me." Then she said, "Did I ask my Lord for a son? Did I not say, 'Do not deceive me'?" He said to Gehazi, "Tie up your garment and take my staff in your hand and go. If you meet anyone, do not greet him. And if anyone greets you, do not reply. And lay my staff on the face of the child." Then the mother of the child said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So he arose and followed her. Gehazi went on ahead and laid the staff on the face of the child, but there was no sound or sign of life. Therefore, he returned to meet him and told him, "The child has not awakened." So the woman says, "All is well with me," and yet she's begging for her son to be revived. Elisha sends his staff, and his servant tries to bring him back. It doesn't work. So sometimes in our lives, dreams die. People die. And I think we should follow the Shunammite woman and say, all is well. God is going to make this back, make this up to me. God is going to exchange my ashes and give me beauty. He's going to take away my reproach and give me blessings, graces, shame. So then in verse 32, and then sometimes we pray in the healing, the resolution that we think is going to fix it. So for example, Gehazi takes a staff and puts it on the child. Nothing happens. And we think, God, I've been praying. I've been seeking you. I'm a good Christian. I'm a Catholic. I try to go to church. I try to obey the laws of the church. I try to live the gospel. I try to share my faith. Why is this happening to me? Why don't you listen to me? Why isn't this working? Then verse 32. When Elijah came into the house, he saw the child lying dead on his bed. So he went in and shut the door behind the two of them and prayed to the Lord. Then he went up and lay on top of the child, putting his mouth on his mouth, and his eyes on his eyes, and his hands on his hands. And as he stretched himself upon him, the flesh of the child became warm. Then he got up again and walked once back and forth in the house and went up and stretched himself upon him. The child sneezed seven times, and the child opened his eyes. Then he summoned Gehazi and said, "Call the Shunammite." So he called her. And when she came to him, he said, "Pick up your son." She came and fell at his feet, bowing to the ground. Then she picked up her son and went out. Wow, that's awesome. This woman was in bitterness. Elisha says that. She's in bitterness. She's in sorrow. And yet she's saying positive things. She's not saying, "Woe is me. My life is miserable. Why did God do this to me?" She says, "Look, God promised me a child. All is well. The child's dead. All is well because I know God is going to make this right. God is going to act here." And so she seeks out the representative of God, Elisha, the holy man. So we need to speak positive things. We as Christians need to say, "All is well." Do we really believe that Jesus Christ is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and he's in heaven and he's moving all things towards our well-being? Do we really believe that? If we do, we can say with this woman, "All is well." Another verse that I think is important, you know, it says in Joel chapter 3, verse 10, "Let the weak say, I am strong." Even more accurately, "Let the weak say, I am a warrior." Is the weak person lying? No. God is saying, "I want you to take on my identity for yourself. Yes, you are weak. You are not powerful. But with me, you are strong." And so we can say, you know, right now in my marriage, it's not awesome. But in Christ, I say, I have a wonderful marriage because I know God has specially created graces, privileges for myself and for my spouse that no one else will ever receive, so that we can enjoy our relationship. We can enjoy this sacrament of matrimony. You may have a child who is astray. They don't go to church. They're in serious sin, whatever it might be. And you can say, "That child is a baptized son or daughter of God, and I give them to you once again, Jesus Christ. Your mark is on that child. Your graces are pulling that child towards you, and I just confess it, and I claim it, and I know it is true. I know that you want this child to be saved, and I join my heart and my intellect in agreement with your heart and your intellect, Jesus. Bring that child home. All is well." That child will, in fact, respond to your graces. So you're not lying or deceiving yourself. You're just tapping in to what God has already proclaimed and declared from heaven. And that, my friends, my brothers and sisters, is the gift of faith. Faith comes in two ways. Faith is the belief in all the right doctrines and dogmas as revealed by Christ through his apostles and defended by the magisterium over 2,000 years. That is being Catholic. We believe the entire universal faith, all the doctrines, all the dogmas, everything. But that is not enough, according to the Catholic Church. You must have a personal faith in Christ. So you believe all the facts, but now you must trust in him, trust in Jesus Christ. Can Jesus Christ overcome your addiction? The answer is capital Y, yes. Can Jesus help your marriage and turn it around? Yes. Can Jesus provide you the financial stability for your spouse and for your children and for your family? The answer is absolutely yes. Can Jesus turn around your financial situation in your business? Yes. Can Jesus turn around your discouragement, your depression? Yes. Can Jesus turn around your health? Yes. Now, God, of course, has his plans, and it may not be his will that this business succeeds, and it may not be his will that this day is the day in which the marriage turns around. But God has a great plan for you, and every negative thing is going to lead to something more positive. Do you believe that? I do believe it. I really do believe it. I believe that every setback, every difficulty is setting myself up, my wife up, my children, setting us all up to something greater. You know, this past couple weeks, we've had the Synod on the Bishops in Rome talking about marriage and the family. There's been a lot of fear, a lot of people scared, a lot of people on blogs, videos, you know, worried that this is going to be the end, that the Catholic Church is going to change her teaching on homosexuality, change her teaching on the indissolubility of marriage, so on and so forth. I think it's important for us as Catholics to say, I believe in the one holy Catholic and apostolic church. I believe the gates of hell are not going to prevail against the church. I believe that you are Peter, and on this rock, Christ is building his church. I believe that the church is indefectible. I believe that the papacy will never say anything infallibly that's wrong. I believe this. You're making a profession of faith, declaring it. And we really do need to say these things. You know, in Latin, the word blessing is benedictio. It's where we get the word benediction, benedictio. It's two words in Latin. The first word is bene, it means well, and dictio, where we get the word dictate or dictionary, it means a word or to speak, to say something. A benediction is something that is well spoken, spoken about something good. So when a priest gives you a blessing or you go to Eucharistic benediction, something good is spoken over you. You either hear the priest say it or Christ himself says a blessing over you. But in Latin, it's benedictio. There's a dictio. There's a dictation. We have to say it. Thinking good thoughts is great, but saying good thoughts is even better. If I think, I sure love my wife, that's good. But if I say to my wife, I sure love you, that's even better. If I say to my son, or no, I'm sorry, if I think in my mind, my son did really good this semester in school, that's good. But if I say to my son, son, you did really well at school, that's even better. Or if I drop my kids off at school and I think, I sure hope y'all have a good day, that's good. But if I say out loud to them, I hope you guys have the best day of your life. I hope God does amazing things for you today at school. That's what I do say to them. That's even better, because it's telling myself and it's telling them that we believe in God. We believe in Jesus Christ. We believe that he's going to do amazing, wonderful, marvelous things today. In the Old Testament, if you've read the Psalms, you'll see over and over, sing a new song. A new song, not an old song, sing a new song. What does that mean? Well, in the Jewish or the Hebrew understanding, when you sing a new song, you're proclaiming something new. What it means is we're not just celebrating that God delivered us out of the hands of Pharaoh in the old days. We sing those songs, the old songs, but we also sing a new song because God delivered me out of something evil today or an hour ago. God is working in my life right now, just as he worked in the life of Moses and of King David and Esther. He is working in my life, and I believe that, and I expect to see it. And those are the eyes of faith. You read the Gospels, the people who come to Jesus with that kind of attitude, expecting and believing and saying it out loud, Christ works miracles for them. And I'm telling you, he's going to work miracles for you and for your family and for your children. So interview three things about being a parent, about being a father. First of all, it's really hard. Let's just admit it, all right? It's difficult. There are hardships involved in it, and that's okay because there's really good things involved in being a parent. Secondly, the attitude of gratitude. Are we thankful for our kids? Are we thankful for our marriages? Are we thankful for what we have? It may not be ideal. It may not be exactly what we want, but we have so many good things in our life. In the book of James, one of my favorite epistles, it says that every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father of lights. Every good and perfect gift. Sometimes we as believers only want the perfect gifts. But the Bible there, St. James, says every good and perfect gift. So there are good gifts and there are perfect gifts. Sometimes we have to recognize that the good gifts are good. They may not be perfect. Your spouse is a good gift. Is he or she perfect? Maybe. Maybe if you've only been married for a week or so, you're still a newlywed, you believe that. But no, your spouse is good. And you should thank God for that. Are your kids perfect? No. But they're good. They're a good gift. Every good and perfect gift comes from the Father of lights. Jesus Christ is a perfect gift. The Eucharist is a perfect gift. Baptism, perfect gift. Some of the other gifts we get are good. They're not perfect. Let's be grateful for that. And then third, positivity. Let the weak say, I am strong. Be like the woman who lost her son and went to Elijah and he says, is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with your child? And even though she's grieving, even though her child is actually dead, she says, it is well, because she's in agreement with God himself. Remember, a benediction is a benedictio. It's speaking well. It's saying it is well. That is what a benediction is. We Catholics believe in blessings. We believe in benediction. So bless your children. Put your hands on their head. Speak good things over them. Say, you are talented. God has given you gifts. You're going to be a leader when you grow up. You're going to change planet Earth. You are going to be a blessing to the church. God is going to do amazing things through you. I can't wait to see it. Those are the kind of things we should say over our children, over our spouses, even to people we meet. Be a person who speaks blessings. Well, thanks for listening. I know this show is a little bit different than normal ones, but I just want to share some personal things and share with you that Joy's doing well, and that baby Margaret's doing well, and that the seven older siblings are all doing well. It is well. It is truly well. And I hope you're encouraged to fight the good fight, to realize that being a parent is hard, but also to be grateful and to be positive, to say benedictions and to say it is well. So until next time, remember that our Lord Jesus Christ said that you are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. Hold on, I'm just going to pause there. Think about it. You are the light of the world. That is a truth declared by God himself. You are light. So confess that. Say today, say tomorrow morning, I am light. I am a light bulb. I am a candle. I bring light to this dark world because God has said it about you. It's true. And then you are salt. You bring flavor. You make things appetizing. You attract people to Jesus Christ. Okay, so now I'll say it again. Until next time, remember, you are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. So go out there and be salty. Hey, everyone, I realized I forgot to do the shout out. So everyone who left a review of this podcast over at iTunes, I will definitely share your name and choose a comment of the week next week in the next week's podcast. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for your feedback, and we'll see you next week.
This podcast was brought to you by the new St. Thomas Institute. Discover online Catholic classes and earn your certificate in Catholic theology at the new St. Thomas Institute. To register for online Catholic classes, please visit newstthomas.com. That's newstthomas.com.